We take a single episode of a science fiction TV series and overanalyze it to within an inch of its life. This is the Fusion Patrol Podcast. Welcome to the discussion.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Fusion Patrol. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Ben.
And tonight we are looking at the, here it is, highly debatable, classic 1970s TV series, Fantastic Journey, and the much-anticipated episode, Funhouse.
Anticipated by who?
One of our listeners.
Oh, and are you kidding me?
No. I'm one of our listeners, and I apologize for not knowing which one it was, posted a comment that says, I realize it's going to be like 3 months before you guys get to Funhouse, which he's right, actually. Even though we're recording it now, it'll be a while before we get to it. 5 or 6 weeks before it goes live. So
yeah, but I kind of wonder, did the listener was the anticipation all about how much
fun this episode would be? That's what it is. How much?
Well, yeah. How much fun? I mean, how much fun was it for the listener, or how much pain was it for us?
Of course, I'm guessing. It could be
for your part. I'm only guessing that it was painful for you.
They could be trying to torture us. That's a good point. Anyway,
well, sadistic fun.
So our intrepid travelers come through into an incredibly tiny zone, which apparently spans just the size of a carnival. A carnival that's strangely deserted and no one's there. Everyone, and when I say everyone, I mean Scott, wants to go to the carnival. Everyone else is a little meh, except, of course, Jonathan Willoway, who's very much, I don't want to go there. Meanwhile, three mysterious figures are watching our travelers, and they decide that Willoway is the right choice. Meanwhile, the woman is really, really, really entranced with how beautiful Leanna is. Probably a little more than propriety would allow. They come to the carnival anyway, and some of the rides come on, which is kind of creepy, or as Willoway calls it, eerie. And then they meet Apollonius, the guy that was talking about taking Willoway. And he tells them how he runs this amusement park just so that travelers can have fun. And why don't you try the fun house? Because that's going to be a lot of fun. And in the fun house, well, they go through a fun house, and there are the bones and the spinny tunnels and all the things that you'd expect in a fun house, and the man Apollonius taking over Willoway's body, possessing him and crushing his brain, or I don't know what he did to him. And then we find out that the problem is that Apollonius is very, very ugly, or just in desperate need of a razor, as is his female assistant, who wants to capture Leanna and take over her body. And then our amazing man from the 23rd century, Varian, manages to hug the bad guy out of Willoway, who goes back to waiting for the next batch of travelers. The end. Yeah.
Do you even have to ask the question?
Well, I don't know. I mean, now that I've given it a recap, you may have remembered some of the good parts about it.
No, I didn't.
You don't remember any?
There is not one good thing about this episode. Not one.
There was.
What, the cat stayed outside?
Continuity. Varian remembered Gwyneth from a previous episode.
Oh, that's true.
I mean, wow, they are just blowing away my whole misconceptions about story arcs in 1970s TV. I mean, this is amazing. This is the new wave of storytelling. And I thought it was Babylon 5, but apparently it's Fantastic Journey.
Well, if you want to refer to just one little tiny story aspect, I suppose so.
So,
oh God, the things that are wrong with this. I mean, first off, okay, we meet Apollonius, and he claims that he is the descendant of the ancient Greek magician Apollonius that Willoway immediately recognizes. And he gives this big song and dance about how, as me and my company, I mean, we washed up on shore with our carnival, and they all kind of left. So now I'm thinking, okay, now where did you get that carnival?
It was part of their spaceship. No, I don't
because
know.
Because he's the original Apollonius.
That is an ancient Greek carnival. That's where that's why carnivals have been such a long-standing...
Oh, with mechanics even.
Very mechanical, very parts. Clever, these Greek people.
Wow, I mean, the Greeks are amazing.
With regards to everything but economics, given the turn of events today.
How the heck did they haul all that? I mean,
well,
at least
they had their Barker, and so he could.
They had their Barker, and there was Roxanne, who, as you are quite correct in your synopsis. Just waxed on a little bit too much about how beautiful she thought Leanna was.
She really, I mean, she's so beautiful.
It's all she said. I thought, okay, I think she's kind of like maybe slightly brain damaged because that's the only words that come out of her mouth.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, let me ask you this question. Let's try to put ourselves in the mind of the travelers. You pop into this place and you see
a
deserted carnival.
Run away. I wouldn't even investigate. Run away.
I guess. I don't know. I actually don't know. I mean, there's something creepy about deserted carnivals in the same way.
Well, okay,
way.
I would admit, yeah.
Creepy about clowns, but...
I admit, I would go down and I would take a look.
That might be Evil Land. I mean, Evil Land does sound like in a carnival.
It could be.
Welcome, welcome. Roll right up. Evil Land here.
Yeah, well, but the moment things start to operate, the first thing that's going to be going through my mouth is feats don't fail me now.
I was wondering if Scott was going to go, let's go on one of the rides. And I'm thinking, I wonder what the maintenance schedule is on those things. I mean, I have this thing about fairs and carnivals, and they put them together, and then, like...
And they take them apart and place them somewhere.
Are the people who put these things together actually really conscientious in their safety protocols when they're putting this stuff together? Here's an abandoned amusement park that could have been sitting there for 100 years, for all we know, because, you know, it's...
Time has no meaning.
Time has little or no meaning there. I mean, that thing's probably falling apart. But way to make it ominous with the music. I mean, happy music. How do you make that creepy? And yet they do.
Yeah, that's true. I'm sorry. Even though I had seen this episode before, to be honest, I actually remembered very little of it. The only part that I do recall is the possession that Apollonius does on Willoway and the bizarre exorcism, if you want to call it that, that Varian does on Willoway. And that's all I recall of this. I don't remember anything of the carnival. So for me, that was kind of fresh to watch. And as I'm taking a look at it, I kept thinking, this is the creepiest thing I've ever seen. I'd be right there with Willoway on this one. I'd be like, you know, I mean, you just don't have a carnival, an abandoned carnival. I mean, okay, I might, Just for investigation purposes, but if things start operating, then I kind of get no. I would be making a very hasty retreat.
Yep, not Evil Land. Let's go.
Precisely. I mean, I leave it to Scott to want to investigate it.
But golly, it's a carnival. People on my time go to these for fun. Really? I suppose 1977 was a simpler time.
I suppose so. You know, the other thing that kind of really bothered me, though, is that Varian seems to have a very good – well, no, I take that back.
Or bad.
Well, actually has a very, very bad ability to be able to determine when people are lying.
It's very bad ability, but then Apollonius was, you know
– a magician.
A magician.
Yeah, so now this has gone from being a very, very poor – science fiction. I mean, let's kind of track where things have gone a bit. We started off as, in the first episode, we had a touch of kind of like this gothic horror, promptly went into science fiction. And then we kind of, in the episode where we met Gwyneth, we went into some very strange type of cultish horror. And now we're into fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
Because now there's magic, and the ancient Greek gods actually exist.
I'm very disappointed in DC Fontana.
Thank you. I noticed that too, that she was the story editor for this.
She's a story editor on this and on Logan's Run, which I might add is every bit as bad.
I am really puzzled because the work that she pretty much did for Star Trek, I thought was rather solid. And I've even read some of her original work and have thought that to be good. So for the only thing I can imagine is that the stories must have been so god-awful bad.
They were beyond redemption.
They were beyond redemption, and what we got was the best that she could do with it. It's the only thing I can imagine.
Okay. Let's
leave Dorothy alone for now.
Yeah, let's pick on a few things in the course of the episode. And I mean, we can pick on things at different levels. One is, you know, you're desperately, desperately, desperate for a plot when you spend that much time walking through a funhouse. Oh, look, funhouses have skeletons and things hanging down. Oh, look, funhouses have slides. Oh, look, funhouses have halls of mirrors.
Was
oh,
that
look.
Not one freaking huge funhouse?
It was. I fully admit it right here. I've never been enticed into a funhouse.
I have. I've been in them a number of times, and they're never that big because they can't be that big.
Because they're mobile, right.
Exactly.
But
I mean, this thing was huge.
It was huge. But I assume that, you know, if it were a fixed carnival, they could have a bigger fun house than they do at the state fair. But any way you go about it, it's just every time I've ever seen one on TV, I've always thought, well, I can just not waste my money on that, even as a little kid. So, but, you know, script reads like this, walks through fun house.
Like, yeah, basically.
There's six pages we can just do away with right there. Woo-hoo!
And then just, you know, add a dark room with skeletons and
cheap,
hanging from that.
Very cheap. On the...
Very, very cheap. Let's add a slide there and have psychedelic lights.
Yeah, I assume that
have
those
a poor
had
excuse
to be...
for a hall of mirrors.
I assume that those had to be somewhere. I mean, they obviously were at a real carnival, so facility.
Yeah, but everything in that funhouse was so studio.
I wonder if
obviously.
That is the same one. There's like one that they went to in Get Smart, so in the late 60s, and of course that was filmed in Los Angeles, and a couple of other shows that I've seen in the 60s where they went to an amusement park. I'm not aware of anything that looks like that in Los Angeles now.
Nothing like that. I'm not aware of any.
I'm guessing it's gone, or perhaps it was even deserted at the point when they went for this shoot, or that could just be a weekday and nobody was there. But it's kind of like the Busch Gardens from that earlier one. It's long gone. Los Angeles has destroyed it and reclaimed it.
Possible.
Anyway. Yeah. So complete waste of time.
Yeah. It was awful. It was just to pad out the entire story. But then when you start getting to some of the plot points, and they're just things that really begin to bug me.
Story.
I know. I couldn't think of a better word for it. You know, that
steaming
that wouldn't...
pile of cow. Never mind.
Well, I didn't want to have us put, you know, an explicit tag on this thing, so I had to use the best politest word that I could think of. But one of the things that really kind of continued to irk me was the whole motivation behind what Apollonius was doing for both himself and for Roxanne, and that is. I mean, Apollonius claims that he was cursed. You know, I'm sorry, you know, hey, you're in a carnival. Why not just, you know, take the mask off and you start a sideshow and call yourself Apollonius the dog-faced boy? You know, but the part that really bothered me, you know, I'm just saying that as a bad joke. The part that really bothered me, though, is they wanted to take over bodies because they were so ugly. And I'm like, hey, you know, you've got a mask.
Shave. And shave. That's
yeah.
The other one. They weren't so ugly that if they had taken a razor to it, they probably could have passed for nor. No, you know what I disliked about that storyline is, okay, you got a guy and he wants to get out of there and he thinks he can't leave and he wants to leave, so he has to possess somebody's body and that's fine. Okay, fine. It's silly, but all right. And he almost succeeds. Varian saves the day, and
I missed a bunch of thunder and lightning inside a room.
Yeah, that was kind of bugging me. And they escape, and then we get to the end of it, and it's like, you know, he's cursed, so probably everybody who comes there goes through this, and he fails every time. It's like, does that then make this whole adventure not just boring?
It was it was meaningless.
But Varian didn't really do anything. I mean, I guess he could have just not done anything, and because of the curse, he would have failed again mm-hmm. for some reason, and then they would have gone on. I particularly didn't like the way they tied that up. Sorry, I jest about the tying it up thing, but just brought it full circle and said, well, that must be his curse then. He just can never get out of this carnival.
So it would seem.
Yeah.
But be that as it may, I found the motivation to be extremely unbelievable. I, again, had a huge issue with the fact that, well, on top of everything else we've had, I mean, okay, we've had a couple of zones where we've had extraterrestrials crash land on this island, and they're in their whatever zone they've decided to migrate to. Okay, fine. To some point I can accept that. But now we've got the ancient Greek civilization and the ancient Greek gods, and we are told to accept that on face value. And then Apollonius manages to perform a possession with magic. And to me, I found that and any time a show takes that kind of a turn, it just really it immediately turns me off to the point where the story becomes lost and there's no recovering.
This is what I have against Christmas episodes of TV shows. You can have, you know, I don't want to say serious, but let's just say an ordinary drama or a comedy or whatever it happens to be. And it's set in the real world where you drop a hammer, it falls, and, you know, people live and die and things don't magically fly and people don't have psychic powers. And then, boom, you hit the Christmas episode and suddenly magic is real, people. Christmas miracles happen and things happen that couldn't possibly happen in the real world. And I mean, there's a time and a place for it, but I think you could write a Christmas special that has to do with the specialness of Christmas in the real world, if it were.
To be honest, I cannot recall any of the TV shows that I watch. I cannot recall any of that ever happening. I mean, anytime I have seen a show that does have any kind of what you want to call Christmas magic, it's very self-contained, so that the entire universe is built on that. So you automatically go in accepting the fact that some kind of magic exists. But any kind of show that's grounded in the real world and then all of a sudden magic suddenly appears out of nowhere? No, to be honest, I don't think I've actually
I'm pretty sure, you know, programs like Friends and whatnot where some Christmas miracle happens, somebody meet Santa, you think they got knocked on the head, and so they wake up and it's like, oh, I realize Santa was real, but then something happens right as you leave the episode to show, wait a minute, Santa was real.
Yeah, the only one that I remember was, and the only reason I know about it is because I saw a story on it. I didn't actually see the show, thank God, but it was an I Love Lucy from way back when, where Santa somehow magically appears. And like I said, I only know about that because I read about it. In terms of present day shows or even ones that are, you know, within the last 10 to 20 years, I honestly cannot remember any. Where
probably
that happened
20 to 30 years now.
I can't remember any where that ever happened. I mean, at least with something like Star Trek, I mean, when they came to, you know, doing their Halloween Cat's Paw episode, at least they found a way to, you know, explain away the magic and show that it was actually tech. And I applaud that. And they've done that with Who Mourns Adonai. Apollo was actually an alien. So that's great. This show took no effort at all.
No. This show has definitely gone to the, okay, we've just thrown any semblance of reality out the door.
I mean, this is really right up there with Man from Atlantis. Yeah. In terms of fantasy now. It's gone from sci-fi to fantasy.
I think it's gone beyond.
Oh, I agree. Actually, I do agree. It is
worse. Gods in there, and you pretty much reach the point you go, okay, well, we've just gone beyond. I could buy that maybe an alien race landed on the planet. Okay, there could be life out there. That's not a specific, no. It might be stupidly done.
But yeah, but it's still okay, grounded in some kind of science.
Admittedly, the Romeo and Juliet one, yeah, you totally can't buy that one. We'd forgotten that one. I'd forgotten that one. That one's
you've forgotten that one?
I had forgotten that one.
I will
That's
never
totally
forget that one.
That's totally fantasy one. So yeah, okay, it's bad, but yeah, we've just got a show here that's thrown all some pretext of reality aside. Now I'm gonna take a detour here, and it might be a spoiler to somebody or even this show, but I have been watching Logan's Run, which is available on iTunes for download.
No kidding.
Yeah, for purchase, yeah, the series.
Far out, I had no idea.
And it includes the three unaired episodes at the end of the series that did not air. And I don't remember whether it's the first or the second of the unaired episodes, which I just watched the other day, and Logan, Jessica, and Rem pull up to this haunted house.
Oh,
it's just simply that. It's just simply, literally that. There are three spirits who are cursed to stay in this house forever until they can possess the body of a woman to reincarnate their fourth dead member. And they're cursed there by the devil himself. And even Rem is like, I believe from the legends, these are ghosts. And when you walk away, that's what they were.
I'm disappointed.
And, of course, that's another DC Fontana. In fact, it's the same crew that did Fantastic Journey, basically just went right on to Logan's Run.
Yeah, when it was canceled. I figured as much.
But, you know, up to that point, I'm not saying that the science fiction was good.
But at least it was science somewhat fiction. Present.
And you pull into this haunted house, and it's like, whoop, ghosts. And I hate that. So if we ever get to that particular episode of, which I think is called, imaginatively enough, Night Terrors. Whoa, there's an original name.
Wow.
I think there may, I may have already tipped my hand that I'm very disappointed.
Gee, I can't imagine why.
In much the same way, I'm very disappointed with this one. But I'm going to come back to a point that you made earlier, that why couldn't Apollonius take his mask off and be Apollonius the dog face boy? And the reason he couldn't do that is because whenever his mask is off, there's that horrid music playing all the time, and nobody could hear what he was saying. So
even if he was at, like, you know, started his, like, his own little sideshow,
yeah,
that would be the soundtrack. So
I think
to
that
speak.
Would just be constantly going on. That was
it was
annoying. Yes.
Along with everything, pretty much everything else in this episode.
There was one thing that was not. There was one thing, I do remember one thing. I have something in my notes here, sort of. And that was when Scott and Varian and Fred got back together, and they said, all right, we've got to get back out of here and go this way through the funhouse. And they get to a certain point, and Fred says, I'm not going that way.
Let's split up.
I'm going up through the air vent.
Oh, yeah, that's smart.
That was actually smart. Until it collapsed on him. But, I mean, in other words, don't play their game. Don't play their game in the funhouse. Go a different way. He was actually being reasonably clever, and it did lead him to where he needed to be. It's just, unfortunately, he's apparently too heavy and collapsed and fell through the roof. But I appreciated the fact that he didn't go, let's split up and you go left, I'll go right. He said, let's beat the game and go a different way. And I thought, well, that's one of the few clever things we've done so far. Obviously, it was moot because the whole thing's a curse, and they would have saved him anyway, and the whole thing's a point.
And then he comes crashing into where Lyanna is, and then he's trying to break her loose, and then you've got Apollonius / Willoway slowly walking up behind Fred with a chair, and I love how Lyanna says nothing.
Nothing at all.
You know, not
well,
even
it's,
a...
It's Willoway. I mean, obviously, just because he's holding a chair like he's going to smash Fred over the head with it.
But even she could have said, hey, what you doing with that chair, big boy? You know, nothing. Absolutely nothing.
I would pay good money to hear Leanna call somebody big boy.
Yeah, it would have been fun, yeah. The other thing that really, in terms of just character development in this episode, is the inconsistency regarding Apollonius. I mean, we hear Apollonius speak in a very almost classical manner when we first meet him. Mm. Now he possesses Willoway, and he talks in a drawn-out speech pattern like this.
I thought that was weird, too.
Why?
Was it because he was struggling to control him? I don't know. I mean, that's the only thing I can think of is he was straining.
But there was no apparent strain on the face. No expression. I mean, if we had seen Roddy, you know, kind of grimace as he was reciting the lines, I would have accepted that. Instead, we're just, he's got this really malevolent look, even more so than what Apollonius himself had at his most evil. And then we get this really weird speech pattern, which was completely inconsistent with everything that we'd seen. Even his behavior while being possessed like this, it just does not jive with anything that we'd seen previously with Apollonius and how he behaved. So I had a hard time. I was going to say it was taking me out of the story, but there really wasn't much story for it to take me out of.
Yeah, it's like, hey, let's go back into the funhouse again and walk through the skulls and things. Yeah.
Yeah, and what's in it for the Barker? I mean, okay, so we get some sense of Apollonius, and we get something about
Roxanne. Yeah, why couldn't he be ugly, too?
What was his story? I mean, he's just there. We know nothing about him or anything of his history. He's just there. And I just could not figure that one out.
So let me ask you a question. And thinking back, 1970s, okay, let's say that he, too, is cursed and is ugly underneath his mask. Who would he have tried to possess?
Fred.
It would have to be Fred, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Because
of...
Two of these things are kind of the
like
same.
Yeah, they like each other, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they could have
I was wondering about that, too. I was like, oh, look, they've got I really was thinking that. I said, oh, their third Greek person is a black person.
Black man.
Which
there was plenty of them in ancient Greece.
Actually, there probably were.
There might have been.
Perhaps not in the highest of positions, but...
That's true. I mean, whenever Greece did any of its conquering, it's very possible that they did go to a place
Africa.
That had...
It's not that far from Africa.
And no, it's not. So it's very possible they did bring back some slaves.
So I'm not gonna put that one beyond, but it's just like, okay, well, it's very convenient that we happen to have a black person on our team, too. Obviously, we have a girl, and they have a girl, and then we have a black guy, and we have a black guy, and we have Apollonius, and we have the smart guy. And of course, we have to have at least one person who's going to save the day, Varian, and then we have to have Scott, because he can do neither. They could not possess a little boy, nor could they have him save the day. So,
well, Scott's already gone through his possession when they were in Atlantium.
And then they didn't. And then they didn't.
Yeah, they didn't. And the weird thing is...
There was no motivation for the guy, yeah.
No, there is none. And going back, as you said, you know, this is 1977. It would have been, you know, because we're old enough. We remember what society was sort of like back then.
That would not have been acceptable if he tried to take over Varian. Let's put it that way.
No, it would
that
not
would
have been
not
acceptable.
Have
plus, you need Varian because he's Mr. Psychic Superman. So he's got to be the one to save the day. But in terms of taking over Fred, doing that on in 1977 network television would have it would have gone right by, and no one would have batted an eye. And it would have given the Barker motivation. Instead, we got nothing out of him, except
maybe
that he's just there.
Likes wearing that outfit. Was kinda,
I don't know. It was just – oh, please. I didn't care.
Okay.
It was just puzzling to me.
I have a question. So when possessed Willoway is trying to kill Varian and Scott, and he turns the rifles on them, the now magic rifles who are shooting at them magically. Okay, that's fine. What kind of crap magician can't make more magic bullets? Not only did they all run out of bullets, but each gun fired one time without a bullet, just so you'd know that they'd run out of bullets. I mean, you do that in a Western, the guy's shooting, he's like, pow, 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 oh, you know, so that you get the reaction. It's like, oh, I'm out of bullets kind of thing. But those rifles did that.
Yeah. It's just another weak bit of storytelling.
And a really bad aim.
Very, very bad aim. I mean, it is so bad. I've got absolutely no criticism because it's that
so bad.
It's beyond criticism. I can't criticize. It is that bad. It was that stupid. Everything about this episode was that stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really, the series has just been dropping in quality at an alarming rate. You know, I become really hard pressed to say, you know, which one really was racing for the bottom faster, this one or Man from Atlantis.
I don't know. Man from Atlantis has more episodes, though, doesn't it?
It does. So maybe it took a little bit longer.
Yes.
But this one is just. It really
we
is.
We can dive deeper and faster than Man from Atlantis. We'll prove it.
Yeah.
At least this show has Liana in it, which, you know, as long as she's there, it can only go down so far. So this zone was pretty darn small.
Yeah, because once it got to the other side of the... Although... one of the things that really kind of perplexed me when they first come out of the zone is they're coming out, and based on the path that they're walking, they should have seen the carnival right there, right away. But
like
they don't.
Scott did, just like the volcano the week before.
But not until he walked like five steps just a little further down, which was like maybe only a 6 foot. Not even, more like a 4 foot.
But is that
descent.
Exactly what he did in the volcano one too? It's like,
that's true.
Oh look, and everyone's just like, what?
Oh, I didn't see it from four steps back. They just got to go down the hill, cross the land, and actually, if I'm not mistaken,
the same place.
Well, I believe they backtracked. It looks like it, because it appears that when they left the zone...
It does look very similar.
It looks like exactly where they came out of.
I don't think it's the exact same spot, but I would
It's the same
bet,
area.
I would not bet money that it isn't 10 feet away.
Oh, it easily.
You know, it's like, set the camera up here, get them in. All right, set the camera up there, get them out.
No one's going to know the difference.
I mean, there's no reason that it shouldn't look a lot alike. I mean, it is just 200 yards away across the... Across the park, so I mean it should be the same geographic looking stuff, but
not necessarily.
But I mean it's not beyond the realm of reality that if you were dropped down in the middle of South Mountain Park here in Phoenix, and you walked 200 yards, it's gonna look pretty much the same.
I would have to watch the episode again, but I could have sworn.
Did you actually just say you were going to watch the episode
no,
again?
No, believe me, I won't.
If I did,
it would be just to check one thing, and that is to see, can you see beyond the carnival?
Mm.
And what can you see?
I could see smog. It was smoggy.
Mm.
It was kind of misty.
I'm just thinking that if there was any kind of mountain or hill or anything, then you should have been able. I'm thinking if the camera was set just right, you should have been able to see it on the other side. Because I'm assuming that for the sake of story, they made a straight line through the carnival because it was literally in the middle of the two time zone portals.
Yeah.
So they just make a straight line through it. And then they go through the next portal and that's it. Which, by the way, how the hell do they see those portals?
I assume they just walk until they hit one. I don't know.
Wow,
I
mean, what a crapshoot.
Perhaps. Okay, I'm not trying to make an excuse for them, but let's
Yes, you
say,
are.
Well, is it not reasonable to assume that each zone is actually completely encircled by a portal?
I don't think so.
Because
only because of the way when in the first episode, the way the pirates, the way they were just kind of like riding their horses, they never ever encountered a zone, and I refuse to believe that it's because they didn't go that far.
I don't know that they didn't encounter a zone.
I think had they encountered another zone, they would have completely flipped.
I think that that's not an incorrect assessment of what they might have done,
although they would have had to, depends on what
the next zone was.
Well, they would have had to have gone through a zone because unless that zone also has beachfront property.
So, you know, it's possible that each zone is just surrounded, and if you just keep walking far enough, you will pass through the zone. Now, if that's the case, then my question is this. If you walk through the portal, you come into another zone, and then instead of turning around and going right back, you walk forward 50 feet, turn at 90 degrees, and walk, where do you go? Do you go to a completely different zone than you would if you walked 500 feet forward and then turned 90 degrees to the left?
Well, the other problem that I have with the idea of a zone being completely surrounded by these portals, I come back to what we discussed a little bit in the first episode, and that is, if the portal is there, why am I able to see beyond it? How am I able to see the foliage in the present zone that I'm in? How am I able to see that same foliage? I mean, if I remember correctly, in the first episode, when Scott and his father step through a portal, they're in an area that looks like Africa.
Right.
It's not very and not quite foresty. They're in a rather foresty jungle area, but then they enter this area that looks, you know, they go through the portal and it looks like something that's more like the Serengeti almost. So the landscape was entirely different.
I can't defend that. Either way, whether there's a portal there or whether there's a dome around them, clearly you're seeing what should be there if you weren't going to pass through a portal. But maybe that's back where it belongs. Maybe that's back really in Africa and you're in this little bubbly thing. I'm going to say that this may not be their finest hour of science fiction.
It certainly isn't.
You know, six and one half dozen. I mean, wherever the portal is, they can see through it anyway, whether it's 10 feet wide or whether it encompasses the entire area. I think the reason that they're going the way that they're going is that they're heading west.
Or east. I'm not sure which direction.
I think they're heading west because I think they said, if you go back east, you'll encounter this and then you'll encounter that and you'll encounter the other. So obviously they're sticking to a direction. But that also implies that the sun continues to operate in the same direction when you go from zone to zone.
A lot of scientific inconsistencies here.
Yes. It's almost as if this idea might not be viable.
Yeah. So already we're now kind of looking at the idea of the Bermuda Triangle being a supernatural / magic kind of place to begin with.
Right.
It's the only way it could function.
Right.
Because it can't operate on a scientific premise. I mean, if you really try to just break it down, it ceases to stand under any kind of scrutiny.
I could take the Bermuda Triangle has some sort of dimensional vortex to take you to another place. That's not exactly very well grounded in science, but I could take that as an idea. But then having it place you somewhere that is a whole bunch of little globules of space and time.
Each one totally different.
Yeah, that one's getting a little bit different. Unless there's an intelligence behind this.
Never having seen the last episode, I don't know, and it's very possible that
there's a last episode.
Well, meaning that. Well, I haven't seen the last episode of this season. And assuming that the producers, writers, I said writer, assuming that they actually had some idea that the show was going to be renewed, maybe they actually thought that there was a possibility that they could come up with some kind of resolution. Or maybe they were just taking, you know, taking a page out of the Erwin Allen school of writing, and that is, no, they're lost and they'll never make it back.
I think that's exactly right. They never intended to find these people. They were going to continue to search through Evil Land for as long as the ratings kept them there. There was no master plan here. In the 1970s, you don't make a TV series with an end in mind. Like, it goes on forever. We'll just keep raking in the money.
Yeah.
As long as they keep watching us.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so one thing I wanted to say. I alluded to it, and when I say I alluded to it, I mean I actually said it out loud during the last time we talked about Fantastic Journey, and that was that we are watching these on YouTube, and the next one, Funhouse, is the very first one that
we have credits.
Watched that has the credits in it.
Yes.
And wow. I wanted to make some comment about the credits because we've not had the opportunity to talk about credits. One is I'm digging that sort of classically old style, cheap TV, sort of Love Boat-ish feel to it. And at the same time, they've put that sort of
it's very disco
70s into it at the same time to give it that sort of, well, we haven't branched too far from old TV shows, but at the same time, we're hip. Music, and I knew the voice when I listened to it last time we were talking about this, and I could not place the right actor because the voice has changed from when it was at its most famous. But the narrator is Mike Rode. That's Race Bannon from Johnny Quest.
And of course,
and from, you know, he was, I can't think of his name, in the Herculoids. The head guy. I mean,
right.
It's such a distinctive voice. He used to be in, he's in countless things. I remember he used to be Pearly Gates in the old Maverick TV series. That one's, now we're dating old back that one. Mm-hmm. But he's just got such a distinctive voice. But here in 1977, it's beginning to show its age. It took me a while to place that. We're just getting at the end of it, and I'm going, that couldn't possibly be Race Bannon, could it? And then because it had the end credits too, right after Dorothy Fontana, it's like narrator, Mike Rode. I'm like, okay. Sadly, I don't think he's with us anymore. So no more proper Race Bannon voices.
No, that was almost 30 years ago, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
Almost.
And he was doing stuff in
the 60s.
In the 50s. He was doing Maverick in the 50s, I'm sure.
Ah.
So, you know, that means he's as old as James Garner and Jack Kelly were. Practically so.
And they're gone.
Pretty sure they're both gone, yeah. Anyhow, that's it. That's all I got.
I mean, all I could simply say is that this episode, I'll just say it sucked. I mean, this is an episode that was all about magic and ancient religious beliefs, as well as spooky atmosphere, all in an attempt to...
Wrapped up in a cheap budget.
Well, yeah, it was an attempt to shoehorn the gimmicks into a poor excuse of a working, and I say this with air quotes, storyline.
Yeah.
That's that. I mean, this was just abysmally bad.
There's not much to recommend it. I mean, even Mr. Whiskers got sidelined on this one. He was sitting out there with the backpacks waiting for the whole story to end.
I mean, for me personally, there was nothing to pull from this story to recommend it.
Okay, I am going to... There is one thing I'm going to, not to recommend it, but there's one more thing I'm going to bring up. So they come into the town, they come into the carnival, and they meet Apollonius, and then they meet the barker who talks to them and tells them about themselves. And so they're like, ooh, he knows all about me. I want to go in this fun house now.
Yeah,
except
man,
for, of course,
man, now that's something I actually wrote that down. Varian, of all people, should have just had all sorts of red alerts go off the moment the barker starts, you know, identifying everybody and where they're from. Like, okay, that's never a good sign.
No, that couldn't possibly be a good sign. Anyway, so they put their backpacks down. They put Mr. Whiskers down. Stay here, Mr. Whiskers. And then they go into the fun house. And then they have their fun. And then Varian and Scott manage to get out of the fun house. And they bump into Willoway, who is possessed, but he's pretending to be Willoway. And he says, "Oh, Vary, Scott, great to see you. Listen, the others are already out. They've headed off into the distance. You follow them up, and I'm going to get the secret of Evil Land from Apollonius, and I'll catch up with you. I'll catch up with you shortly." And Varian's like, "What? They went on ahead?" "Yeah, yeah, they went on. And we have to go." "Yeah, you have to go too." "Well, why won't he tell us?" "Well, he likes me. He likes to tell me." Right? We got this whole thing. But what if that plan had worked? What if Varian had gone, "Oh, okay. Willoway, I'm going to go." Wouldn't he go pick up his backpack where he would see all of the other backpacks sitting and Mr. Whiskers waiting?
Yeah, well,
because
obviously
that's where they were at the end of the episode when they actually came out of the funhouse. And in fact, they came out the same stinking door of the funhouse, and Mr. Whiskers and the bags are right there. I mean, they're 5 feet away from that door, from the exact same spot that Willoway was trying to convince Varian that everybody else had left. I'm thinking he would have maybe noticed Mr. Whiskers and the bags at that point. But, yeah. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it was a bad idea.
Yeah. He could have at least hid the bags and cooked Mr. Whiskers.
Just more bad story execution in a very, very bad story in a very, very bad series.
All right. Well, Ben, thank you for joining me for this epic adventure in space and time.
It was torturous.
Torturous. And I hope our listener who was looking forward to this episode, I hope it was everything you wanted it to be.
I certainly hope so.
And if you were doing this just to torture us,
success.
Yeah, but that's not nice, man. This is not nice. All right. Listeners, I hope you'll join us all again next time when it will not be Fantastic Journey.
End of line.
Fusion Patrol is a Lone Locust production. Like us, leave us a review on iTunes. Or stop by and visit at our website, fusionpatrol.com. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Search for Fusion Patrol. Or just drop us a note at feedback@fusionpatrol.com. Our music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolfe.